Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, episode 41, season two.
Yes.
My name is Brandon Curry.
I'm Jeff Collins.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
Thanks very much, everyone, for tuning in, caring, and sharing. And thanks to our still our sponsor, Brand Boulevard. But we just are not giving away any gifts because we can't right now. We're not allowed to.
We might anyway, be giving away a magic toilet that Trevor was talking about earlier, yes, though. Eh?
Masculine toilet. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe we do some grass seed too. We can give that away.
To those that are listening or watching, it's in reference to a closer look by Seth Meyers on one of his most recent episodes. And then if you want to know more about the Brandon thing, just go back to the last episode and he had to take a pause for the cause and go and bitch at his neighbor.
For cutting his grass.
Yeah. I hope the neighbor doesn't watch or listen.
But I just seeded. Damn it. You can't cut when you seed.
There we go. We just lost a listener from the next door neighbor.
Got it. If you saw my front lawn, you'd understand. I take care of my front lawn. I can't take care of my back lawn because I got two labs. Anyway. What were you talking about? All right,
we
yes.
We are going to talk about Trevor,
at the end of the last episode, episode 40, you brought up an article that was basically going around saying that it is a...
Could serve be the start of the basic universal income fund.
Or basic so it's funny that you bring that up, and only because I've wanted to talk about this topic.
Can you explain to us what the universal income would be for everybody, so they understand?
Stop interrupting me. If you stop,
you're going to go off with something that I don't even understand. I want to explain it first.
No, I was going to. Like, if you just give it a second, Okay.
All right.
So, universal basic income. So, what it is in theory? So, universal basic income dates back. That theory dates back. Oh God, several decades, if not longer, and a universal basic income is the theory based on that the government gives everybody, either annually, semi-annually, monthly, a stipend from the government coffers to as a base income for everyone, or a universal basic income for everyone in the country. That's the theory. So the theory being that it's tax-free, and that it is indexed to inflation, and that it in somehow is correlated with some sort of minimum income calculation. So if it's $15 an hour is agreed upon that is the, you know, at least the minimum wage, well then it'd be $30,000 a year or thereabouts based on a 40-hour work.
And this is every age, every person.
No, so typically it's every adult. So anyone over the age of 18 would be considered to be eligible. And the reason why they do that is they typically have, even though you can work over the age of, I think 16 in Ontario, you are actually recognized as an adult in the eyes of the law. And so you therefore can, you know, hold a full-time job, a salaried job, that kind of thing. That's why they use 18 as their ballpark. The theory also being that if somebody has a universal basic income, you would take more risks. You would take on jobs that are 100% commission, like a real estate agent or a mortgage broker or a financial advisor, or maybe you'd want to go to law school, or you would do the things that you would want to do and not have to worry about. The offset to that is all social programs, especially income-tested social programs, would be removed. So I know our listeners are here saying, okay, what the heck is an income-tested social benefit? Okay, an income-tested social benefit would be OAS, on Old Age Security. It would be ODSP, Ontario Disability Social Program.
Support program, yep.
Support program, sorry. It would be
Ontario Works.
Ontario Works. are all examples of income-tested social programs, even OSAP.
What about ODSP?
I did say, yeah.
Okay.
I said ODSP,
sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So all the programs would be eliminated.
All of them would be eliminated because you wouldn't need them.
What about CPP?
CPP you contribute into.
Okay.
CPP.
See, and I don't know if EI would be removed from it as well.
You would because EI.
But you're contributing to it.
You are contributing to it. But
maybe you wouldn't anymore.
You wouldn't anymore because the whole idea is you get, so it's income tested. So A, you can't be working while you're on it, right? Mm-hmm. B, you only get 55% up to a maximum annual income, which I believe is around $40,000 or $45,000 a year. So if someone, I know that when my wife was on mat leave, it equated to just around $1,000 every 2 weeks or $26,000 a year, which was her EI maternity leave benefit. Well, my wife makes way more than $44,000 a year. So that is a significant hit to the system. So the theory being is that if I'm getting a universal basic income that's not income tested, once I'm able to, either I'm off of work or maybe mat leave, I can go back to work and not have to worry, or go back to work part-time or whatever the case may be, and not worry, have to worry about childcare. The Canadian child care tax benefit would be eliminated because that's income tested. So you wouldn't really have to need those things because both adults in the home would be getting their universal basic income.
No matter what, even if you work, everybody gets it.
Everyone gets it.
I like it.
So I've ran.
Here's the problem. It's based on $15 an hour. So those people don't have to work and they get it, right? So they just get at home unemployed and get it and still get it.
That's where some of the arguments are, is that
you're going to do that job then. No one's going to bother doing it. Either I can work or not work and get the same amount of money.
So no, you're missing the point. You get it regardless. So if you choose to sit at home,
you double your income.
Right. If you choose to sit at home and make $30,000 a year, well then, and inflation happens, hyperinflation happens, or whatever the case may be, well then that's your prerogative. That's it. Good for you. But if someone wants to, if that single mother who wants to go out and also have that job at Tim Hortons or McDonald's or whatever, because that's all they can do because they have childcare as well, they can actually now either have two options. Use their universal basic income to pay for childcare and then go get that full-time job, or keep their universal basic income and keep their same part-time job, and now they're adding to their overall income.
Really, they're making $30 an hour instead of 15, kind of.
Well, when they're working, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I just threw out $15 an hour as an example. That's just, yeah. I just used that as an example. So when we ran the numbers, and only because I'm in the process of writing an article with a co-writer, we're in the process of figuring it out. And when I ran the numbers and went in onto Stats Canada, we would have to add $940 billion of revenue in order to pay for all the over 18-year-olds at $30,000 a year tax-free. To put that into perspective, it was $900 billion. To put that into perspective, the total tax revenue that the government of Canada received in the year of 2018, which is the most recent tax year that Stats Canada had available, was $944 billion. We would essentially have to double our entire revenue stream of income coming in order to pay for this benefit. So then that leads to, okay, maybe we should still do the universal basic income, but tax it like they do OAS, like they do ODSP, like they do EI, like they do maternity leave and what have you. And on top of that, make it not income tested, but make it like the old age security program. And the old age security program, for our listeners and for what you don't know, at 65, the maximum old age security right now, I think, is around $700, just shy of $700 a month. And as you make up to an indexed amount. It's a ballpark around $74,000 a year. Again, indexed. Your OAS starts to get clawed back. So you start to get clawed back on your OAS because they're like, well, you make over $74,000 in retirement, dude. You don't need this taxpayer-funded benefit. Because OAS you don't contribute into. So, and it claws back at 15% for every dollar over that amount of 74,000 bucks. And then it completely gets reduced to zero at around $120,000 to $130,000. I'm using ballpark numbers.
I thought it was 104.
No, it's actually, if you want me to.
Yeah, please.
OAS.
Get your numbers right.
OAS clawback. Where are we here? Ba-ba-ba-bum. That's EI. Hold on.
I was going to say this is the longest Brandon has gone without talking.
Okay, in 2018,
yes.
OAS clawback started at $75,910. Now that's been indexed. And the maximum is around $120,000, where you get zero.
Okay.
Where you get zero. I have to, she doesn't show it, which I don't know why. I will look that up. So anyways, the key is to maybe make the universal basic income something like that, where if you do lose your job and you do find yourself to be unemployed, you know that you still have this fail-safe coming in every single month and that you can actually plan, and with the average Canadian family making around $70,000 a year, then you can easily add another $60,000 to the family income split between the two adults, and it would actually really not affect the vast majority of Canadians, right? If that makes sense.
I'm just curious where they come up with money to support this program. Like, I know Trudeau spent that last week alone on COVID, but like, how do they do this all the time? They got to stimulate that revenue, right?
It's coming.
Yeah. So the fact of the matter is, we're getting to a point where technology and AI is basically eliminating a lot of the laborer jobs that we used to have that would employ the vast majority of Canadians, whether you're uneducated or educated. And unfortunately, the jobs that still require people to do what they need to do, it's less than the laborer jobs, right? Does that make sense? So you're gonna have a ton of people on social services, right?
Yeah.
So I found it, Trev.
Yeah, I'm still here.
In 2018.
I'm already looking at it. 123,386.
Yeah.
And Jeff, to answer your question, the only way that the government's going to get money to cover these bailouts is raise taxes somewhere.
Exactly.
Somewhere, HST or income tax or something.
It's worthwhile going and reading the McLean's article that talked about it. The McLean's article. So if anybody that is listening or watching wants to go, it is an opinion piece, but it's titled, "Will This Pandemic's Legacy Be a Universal Basic Income?" And you know what they're talking about? If they did it, they're saying that it will cost less than what it's costing them in CERB payments, but it talks about reducing the cost down by $44 billion if they eliminated all low-income social assistance programs.
So as a financial advisor here, Curry, what do you think about it? You for it or against it?
In theory, I'm for it. In theory,
if it's done properly,
right. That's the problem. So my biggest issue is, and I've gone on record and said that a universal basic income is the way to go, because okay, I'll give two scenarios to compare to people. If you talk to anybody about the taxes that you pay towards school and healthcare, notwithstanding the services that we get and the fact that, you know, there's long wait times, yada, 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 it's, you really fundamentally, there's a very small percentage of the population that can't stand free education or a decrease in or a subsidized post-secondary education, and along with free healthcare, because we can all turn around and say, well, at one point in time, I needed to have that healthcare and the healthcare and the education. Where you have a problem with income-tested benefits is something like OSAP, where if you make above X, if your parents make above X, so Bondo, let's use that because your kids are pretty close to going, or close, you and Jeff, or kids are close to going to school or post-secondary. Yeah. And let's say if you're like my dad, who my mom and dad basically said, we have some money saved for you, because they never had the RESP back then.
No.
But we can only afford X amount. For crying out loud, it took us $100,000 and change at that time to get you to 18. Go get a loan, go work your butt off, and go and do that.
Yes.
So I go and apply for OSAP to get an interest-free loan, and then I was going to work in the summers and pay it back. And I get told that I did not qualify for OSAP at the time because my dad made too much money. Working at General Motors, people. He worked at a very good job, but worked at General Motors. So he's not like, whatever. My dad was
60, 70 grand, right?
My dad was pissed. He basically said to the guy or girl, what does my income have to do with whether or not my son or daughter needs to go to post-secondary education and whether or not they can afford to? It has nothing. I took them to 18. God damn it!
Yep.
Like where is the form that I signed that say to that? And that, people, is where people have a problem with income tested social benefits.
See, the difference with OSAP though is they're making decent points on the back end.
100% they are.
Well, right? But there's a way around them making no money on the back end, right?
Yeah, they've got loan forgiveness and everything on that too.
Well, all I say is, like, if you are in a financial position that you can pay out your OSAP, so you graduate in April, you have to start paying it back that November. So if you graduated this April, you will have to start making your payments November 2020.
Yep.
But if you can afford to pay your loan in full, at least this is, I don't think they've changed it. I'm going back to when I was in school and had OSAP. Same ordeal. If you can pay it in full, no interest.
Gone. I took out a loan.
It was free. I did too. I paid it off.
So unless you in November start making the regularly scheduled mortgage payments on your OSAP, that's the only way the government actually makes interest off of it.
That's correct.
Is when you enter into that situation.
Yep.
And that's fine.
I was going to say, where are we at with universal income? Are there something that's being proposed right now or talked about?
It's not something that's being proposed formally. It's something that's really being kicked around on the internet and around pundits. Ironically, universal basic income is actually a fiscal conservative idea. And it actually originated in Europe. It actually didn't originate in North America. So
Scandinavian?
Yeah, it's typically Scandinavian. It's a right-wing think tank in Scandinavia. Now, that's not where it formally started. It didn't formally start there. It actually formally started in Germany. But the Scandinavia is a place that they truly embraced that type of metrics. And because it's the whole notion, a high tide raises all ships. So basically, if everybody gets to get their universal basic income, and I choose to make over $80,000 or $90,000 a year, and I start to get my UBI clawed back, well, then that's my choice. But I can't knock the fact that I also got 30 grand while I was in school at 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, and I never had to take out a loan, and that's what I would pay for my schooling and all that kind of stuff.
And get the economy humming too, really.
It would get the economy humming, and it wouldn't have anything to do with whether or not your parents are rich or not. It didn't matter whether or not you had an inheritance, because right now, as another example, an income tested benefit is ODSP. And basically, we in the financial industry have created something called the Henson Trust, which we've talked about in a previous episode. And that is because if you're disabled, you cannot make over a certain amount of income. Otherwise, you get kicked off of ODSP benefits and ODSP income. So what they've created is, for inheritance purposes, something called the Henson Trust, where your parents, your grandparents, whoever wants to leave you money, it gets put into a Henson Trust in order to protect the disabled individual from being kicked off of social benefits. Well, as someone who's been blessed, and I have no disability, I have two healthy children, why would you kick someone off of social benefits who's disabled? Like, it doesn't make any logical sense to me, purely because they got an inheritance. That doesn't make any sense. They have no control over the fact that they're disabled, nor do they have any control over the fact that they got an inheritance. And it's just not fair. I've had clients who've won money on a scratch ticket and had to give it to a brother or sister to claim that scratch ticket because they'd be kicked off of ODSP benefits. How stupid is that? It's ridiculous. No, I know. You're disabled. You've already met the metrics. You've hit the bar. A physician has actually stated that you are prolonged impaired, and here's the form. CRA is agreed. You get the disability tax credit. You get ODSP. It's a fairly simple equation. Whether or not you get an inheritance or not should have no bearing. Yeah. And so what you do is you have people going to pay lawyers, no disrespect, Bondo, thousands of dollars to set up a Henson Trust purely so that their loved one doesn't get kicked off of ODSP. It's completely asinine and ass backwards.
No, it's not thousands of dollars to set up a Henson Trust, but I mean, it's something that you would incorporate into your will, but it would increase the cost of your will for sure.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
And I did double check. I think it was Finland that had the basic income. And it was only a test trial, I think, for 2 years. And from what I can gather, it's deemed to have failed. But I don't know any of the other literature on it.
So really, this is just background momentum that people are talking about, nothing ending anytime soon.
Well, I think what my article will be saying and what I'm proposing is, if you're going to do it, so Kathleen Wynne did it in Ontario and she did it in Hamilton, and it was canceled a year later once the new government formed. It was also done in Winnipeg too. About a couple of decades ago. My proposal is you do it, you pick, let's say, PEI, or you pick like an island somewhere that's secular, that you can do an entire province, and you can run it not just in a city, but you can run it in an isolated place that you can kind of truly see the economic impact in the area, right? And you run it for 3 to 5 years. And you see what that cost is and what the economic impact is. And why I say PEI, or maybe up north in Manitoba, is because those areas have been heavily hit hard due to the fisheries and lack of tourism and what have you. So it's actually, you can actually get a true indication of some numbers.
Yeah, and it wasn't Winnipeg, it was Manitoba, and it was in the 70s.
That's right.
Yeah, and it was Trudeau's dad.
Pierre Trudeau did it in the 70s.
So it was funded.
Yeah, but where it was in Winnipeg, the city of Winnipeg, was it not?
Manitoba.
Well, that's the province.
I think it was generally for Manitoba, which would encapsulate Winnipeg.
The whole province? Okay.
I believe so.
Oh, I see Brandon Curry for Prime Minister. If it's going. One Niagara, universal income. You got my platform. You got my vote, buddy.
Help us help you stay informed.
Thanks, everybody.
Out.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at BoilingPointPodcast.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Produced by Crier Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.